The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
From the record of transmitting the light. The 35th ancestor, Great Master Shito, visited Ching Yuan. Ching Yuan asked, "Where are you from?" Shito replied, "I come from Shaoxi." Ching Yuan then raised his Hosu and asked, "Does this exist at Shaoxi?" Shito answered, "It's not only non-existent at Shaoxi, but it doesn't exist in India either." Ching Yuan asked him, "You haven't been to India yet, have you?" Shito said, "If I went, it would exist." Ching Yuan said, "That's not good enough. Say more." Shito replied, "Master, you should say half of it and not depend completely on me." Ching Yuan said, "I don't refuse to speak to you, but I'm afraid that after this, no one will be deeply awakened." Shito said, "It's not that it will not exist. It's just that no one will be able to express it." Ching Yuan hit him with the Hosu, and Shito was greatly awakened. Kazan says, "How can I examine this story? Would you like to hear?" With one raising of the Hosu, he held up the totality of the way. Never by so much as a hair did Shito ever deviate from it. So this morning, a bright sun, fresh breezes fill the temple. And we continue our journey alone, each one of us moving into the heartland. And the heartland, of course, filled with wondrous treasures and terrible dangers. This path is not for the faint of heart, except that, of course, all of us are faint of heart. All of us at some point wonder, can I do it? And together we sit, together we tromp around the infinite circle of the Zendo. Together we eat, we follow the bells as best we can, we join in as best as we can. Most of us are not used to feeling like we're a part of things. Maybe if you feel like you're a part of things, you don't practice Zen. You're fine, already a part. But for some of us, hard to understand. And I think for all human beings, this wondrous consciousness we have that is so fantastic and inexplicable and creates such gorgeous works of art and creates so many wonderful things is also so painful and so certain of its limited view, and this little self pretends to be something it's not, and this little self sees clearly there are two kinds of things in the world. There is me and there is the world, and this division is so self-evident it's hard to see beyond it. It's hard to see through it. And unless we see through it, then we are part of everything, but we wander around as if we were all alone. We feel separate. This separateness I think all of us feel from time to time, maybe just a little glimmer, maybe hugely painful, is part of what leads us, part of what inspires us. And so here we move into this aloneness together, going deeper and deeper. Any plan we have, of course, is a plan from the old world, the world of this and that. It is not what is happening in the moment, and it is not what is necessary to take the next step. There's that wonderful title of one of the many books I've never read, but it's called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. So wonderful, what got you here, everything that has happened, all of the things we would say, that was good, that was fortunate, and all of the terrible things, the heartbreak, the losses, the leavings, the falling apart, the failures. All of this brought us here to this moment. And this is a story about two guys talking together. We might say two friends along the way, though one is playing the role of teacher and one is playing the role of student. And they're looking into the matter. One of us used the image of ping pong in the Dharma dialogue. Oftentimes we can hear this, and I hear this as, oh, you know, they should cut to the heart of it. Why are they playing ping pong? Well, ping pong is actually wonderful to play, right? I hit it, and then it goes over on your side, and then you hit it, and it goes in the corner, and I just barely get it, put a top spin on it, and then you cut it, and we can have lots of fun together. And maybe from the outside it might look like, what are those two knuckleheads doing with the ball and the paddle? They seem to be exerting themselves. What's the point? Well, the point is the giving and receiving. The point is the relationship. The point is when the paddle meets the ball and I swing. This is the point at every moment. And so looking into this together and this together investigation is hand in hand with the only you investigation on your cushion. No one can investigate for you. You might wish that someone else could investigate this place, because I would rather not be here. I would rather not feel this. I would rather not have this come round again. But no one can investigate your life, and no one can investigate life itself except through you, through your experience. Toward the end, Shi To says to Ching Yuan, his teacher, you should say half of it and not depend completely on me. Can't you do half of the work? The wonderful answer is no. Your teacher, no matter how wonderful or deeply enlightened, cannot do it for you. And we were talking yesterday about this this power relationship, We say this, and yet the teacher seems to be the one who says, oh yeah, that's good. Oh no, no, go back, more zazen. But interestingly, in the end of this koan, the end of it, Qing Yuan, the teacher, does something. He does his demonstration. He opens his heart. He gives himself away in this action. And of course, we're all giving ourselves away all the time. You are never hidden. Don't worry about that. But the teacher does this, lifts his whisk, this hosu, this ceremonial symbol. Shito was greatly awakened. You'll notice that Shito was the one who had the experience. We don't hear how it was for the teacher. Although these moments of touching and being touched are wonderful on every side. And as we sit in the Doksan room together, we might think that you're sitting there and I'm sitting here. But when we come in the Doksan room, we are sitting together, you and I looking into the matter, both of us bringing as much of ourself as we can. And this is the wonder and the opportunity of Doksan, to be able to enter into this together. We say it all the time, but I want to say it again. It is an astonishing privilege to play the teacher role in Doksan. For me, sitting in the teacher seat, the door opens and Buddha walks in. Often I see and feel the Buddha. You come in shining brightly as yourself, shining brightly in the midst of your confusion, shining brightly in the midst of your ease and spaciousness. But each one of us shines with this light, don't we? This light that we can never know. But maybe we get a glimpse of it as we look around. And so this this sacred game of ping pong, also playful, back and forth, looking into it. How do we find our way into this moment that is already here? One teacher said, because it is so very near, it takes so long to realize it. And there's one story of these two that's a story of their interaction. I think when they first meet, my assumption is that in this case we're looking at, they had been living and working together for quite a while, quite some deep intimacy. And the story of their first encounter, and this is after Shito had been, after he misheard his teacher and was looking into it, was investigating the matter, and someone kindly said, oh no, that's not what your teacher said. He said, go see Qing Yuan. So Shito went to visit Qing Yuan. And Qing Yuan said, there are people who say that something is happening in Ling Yan. Ling Yan is where Shito came from. So the teacher says, there are people who say that something is happening where you come from. And Shito said, there are people who do not say that something is happening in Ling Yan. Quite a wonderful response, this Shito fellow, not playing the humble Zen student, not saying, oh yeah, I guess you must be right, although I can't figure it out. He plays the other side. Well, some people are saying that, and some people are saying just the opposite. And so Ching Yuan, the teacher, says, if that is so, where did the teachings of the Mahayana and Hinayana come from? There are people who say that something is happening in Lin Yan. There are people who are saying there's something about this Buddhism. They say something happened in India thousands of years ago. They say something is happening here in the Zendo. Says, now there are people who do not say that something is happening. Teacher says, if that is so, where did the teachings of Zen come from? And Shito answered, they are wholly from here. Ching Yuan, the teacher here in this first interaction, affirmed this as correct. And after that, they often engaged in question and answer discussions. So I love this little interchange that is moved forward, not by being nice. I don't know about you, but I was so deeply trained. The most important thing is to be nice and not to upset people. It doesn't matter what you're feeling, keep that to yourself. Be a good student, be a good person. One Zen teacher says, you cannot wake up by being a good boy, a good girl, a good person. There is something that is required because we have to, in some deep way, we have to challenge what we have taken to be true. The ancient stories told by our ancestors, by your mothers and fathers back through generations, there is a momentum to the stories about who you are. The momentum of generations. And unless it is really important to you, if it's kind of important to you to meditate, that will be a nice thing that happens once in a while. But if it is really important to you, it's not that you need to know why, but some part of you, we might say you have followed some part of yourself here. Great courageous part of you that came knowing full well that it would not be a sweet little picnic with lots of rest times, knowing full well that you were heading once more, as we do, this great spirit of Zen, and I so appreciate this stream. So just like the stream of your family and these koans you have been given, these koans, which are your entry point, it's not that there is any life without the delusions, without the particular karma, and this particular karma is not what holds you back. Your particular karma is what brought you here, and where the only possibility is, it's not where you have got it all sorted out. It's precisely where you are confused, resentful, angry, anxious, worried. All of this, this is the great place of possibility, where the old teachings of, we might say, the small self, the teachings of separation, the teachings of me and you are breaking down. And when they break down, it is no laughing matter, because you break down and I break down. This is the design of Sesshin. And so we have that stream, incredibly fierce and powerful, and we have this stream of awakening of Shi To and Qing Yuan going at it with each other, going at it with great generosity and great authenticity. The point of their dialogue is not to console or be careful with the other one, but to speak some kind of truth. And in this activity, in this dialogue, each of them fully doing their best, each one of them is present in this happening. And so this model we have of teacher and student, and the teacher has the answer. I'm holding a number of fingers out behind my back. Is it three or is it four? If you guess correctly, I'll pat you on the back and send you back to the Zendo. It's not like this. It's not like this. One of the only times my teacher, George Bowman, ever really got angry with me and told me about it. I suppose he was pissed off with me often, as I can be an annoying person. But the only time I remember, the time I most vividly remember, was before I was going on retreat with this quite a well-known Japanese Zen master, and it was a very strict, I think it was, you know, up at 4:30, and the yelling in the Zendo of, you know, not moving, and quite severe. And I had been once before with this teacher, and I was pretty nervous. And this is a teacher who we did Doksan four times a day. And it was not, would you like to go to Doksan? The bell would ring, and you were supposed to jump up off your cushion and run up the hill to be waiting in the waiting area. And then he would ring his bell in his little cabin on the other side of the hill. And when it was your turn, you rang the bell and you ran as fast as you can down the hill to present yourself to the teacher. Say your name and your practice. Oftentimes the Doksan would last maybe 10 or 15 seconds. You would present your answer and he would ring his bell. Thank you very much. How are you doing? No hints. Nothing. He had great faith. But anyway, I was getting ready to head off there for this retreat. The week before, I had a dream. And in the dream, this old teacher was in his hospital bed. He was dealing with health issues. I think he was over 100 years old at this time, maybe just before. But he was in his bed, and I was by his bedside, and he put his hand on my head, and he blessed me. And I was so touched, still touched to this day, as I recall that dream. And I told that dream to my teacher with great pride, kind of showing off or letting him know. And he said, "Do you think this is about making the teacher happy? This is not about getting the teacher's blessing." I don't recall him ever being quite as animated. And I was brought up short. Doesn't matter whose blessing you have or who helps out or what they think of you. This matter of awakening is beyond that. And here in this dialogue with these two ancient worthies Shito, already when he came to Qingyuan, already acknowledged by the teacher. If that is so, where did the teachings of the Mahayana and Hinayana come from? The master answered, they are wholly from here. In this, he cuts through these stories. Is it there? Is it here? Where did it happen? When did it happen? Life, the Dharma, the teachings are wholly from here, are wholly here, are only here. This is everything. And so already affirmed by the teacher. And I guess I would like to end by saying that each one of you is fully affirmed by each one of us sitting up here playing this teacher role. Our admiration and gratitude for you is boundless. And so let's continue to do this wonderful work together. Thank you. So let's form our horseshoe shape or U shape. So, Will.
Thank you for that wonderful talk. Sort of taking apart the sense that I was voicing yesterday that this is all about winning and there's one winner. I think it became clear to me that part of how that happens is that we tend to talk about the beginning of the anecdote and the end, but the middle is really interesting. And that's where it's, you know, a little different from some koans. In other words, it's not just teacher asks a question, student can't answer or gives the wrong answer, and then there's a hit. There's all this stuff about India and whether the thing would be, you know. So I guess I was hoping, in a way, to hear that part again, but also to sort of give Shito some, and for giving him some credit, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
Right? And I guess the only thing that I could think of is, you know, maybe the answer is something about, bringing up another place and this theoretical place, which is part of what makes it interesting, you know. In India, even X wouldn't do something like that. But the theoretical, the sort of, that's not here and now, right? Mm-hmm. But it's quite peculiar, their exchange in the middle, and has several steps. And I want to stop focusing on just the hit.
Right,
know?
Right.
Yeah, we're lucky to be here for 7 days and have 6 Dharma talks. So my intention anyway is to start to look into that, but I don't get to do that for another few days. I don't know what Alan and Michael are planning, maybe nothing at this point, just we find our way in. But definitely that's going to be a part of what we look at. I think you're saying something even more important, just that I want that to be explicated. And there's something mysterious in their ping pong game.
Yeah.
And there's a way to understand it from our own experience of playing inner ping pong. Right? So when we work on this koan as a koan, you know, in individual doksan, we do have to put ourselves, we have to be Qingyuan and we have to be Shito, And we have to authentically feel whatever it is that they felt that would make them say such a thing. So that's the entry point. You know, not, what are they talking about? Let me figure this out, as we've been saying. But what must they be feeling that when they open their mouths, this would come forward? And to take each line that way is how you work with it as a individual koan. And I think we'll be kind of, I don't know what, as I said, what everybody's planning. But that's definitely in the back of my mind, because I want to know when I give a talk and my mouth opens, I don't know what's going to come out. But I do know that I can be very intimate with what these people are saying and find something in that to share. Yeah. So thank you for saying that. Mm. Definitely taking it to heart.
Mm. Yeah, thanks. Anne.
Yeah, this sort of relates to Will. I have a horrible time understanding koans and poetry when they're read to me, even when it's read a couple times. And I think it's because it doesn't logically follow. Mm-hmm. You have to hold something three lines down, how it relates to the one up there.
Yeah.
And I don't seem to be able to do it.
Yeah.
It's I remember what he talked about India, but I can't relate it to what was before and after it, because I don't remember that.
Well, as I was finishing here, I almost read it again.
Mm.
Clearly I should have, but I didn't. So I think there is this, especially this koan, this is a quite difficult one. Some are much more straightforward. They did, you know, one thing. So that's part of this too. And you don't have to understand what you don't understand. Trust that whatever comes through is enough. The point of this is not to analyze the koan, right? This is not about being... So after this retreat, you'll be able to go line by line and, you know, give a good explanation. But I hear the some frustration and the desire, like, yeah, I kind of want to look into it.
What's that even analyzing? Getting a sense of it when
you've got
bits sort of hanging out in space, it's sort of frustrating.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah.
So we have our part of our curriculum, and when you work on koans, you have to memorize them.
That makes sense.
Right. So when you memorize them, you internalize them, and what comes out of the memory of response is something greater and deeper than the things that happen in the koan. And so you can actually, when Will was talking, I sensed this, well, the beginning of the koan and the end of the koan. Well, the end of the koan is actually the beginning of the koan, because it ends with the story and starts with you.
Well, you should send them to us ahead of Sashin, and we can all have our
Yeah, but again, the other side of that is feeling what you're feeling is so important, to feel the frustration, to feel that I don't get it, to feel that not knowing, to really value that as well, right? And, you know, I don't know if you were thinking this, Paul, but you and I just exchanged looks. Paul and I taught at the Center for Mindfulness. I sometimes think, wow, what were we thinking, calling it the Center for Mindfulness? You want to know where the mindfulness was originating, that's where it was. And we were taught a very specific technique of reading poetry. Because we used a lot of poems, and it was from this poet, David White. That's where we first learned it. Does anybody know David White? Wonderful, wonderful guy, wonderful poet. And he would read lines from poetry over and over and over again. And I'll never forget the first time I heard one of my mentors, Saki Santarelli, read a poem in an all-day retreat. He just kept repeating the first line, and I didn't know it was a poem. And it was the Wild Geese poem, maybe you know, by Mary Oliver. And what's the first line of that?
The
first line is, you do not have to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And he started saying it during yoga. And we were all, like, you know, bending over and trying to move our legs and stretch. And he suddenly started saying, you do not have to be good. You do not have to be good. He said it many times, and then the next line is, you only have to let whatever it is,
the soft animal
of your body
love
what it loves. Yeah. By the time he said that, That's how I learned to read poetry. But one time I was at Harvard University giving a law and Dharma presentation, long story, and somebody came up to me afterwards because I'd read a poem like that. He was from a foreign country, very, very angry. He said, we're talking about people yelling at us. He said, "What were you doing mangling that poem? I'm a poet. Never do that. That's terrible. That's not what I mean. I want people to hear it and get lost." I thought, that's pretty cool too, right? After I got over the initial sting of the slap. So I changed the way I started doing it. I would read a whole poem through and then pick little pieces, right? It doesn't matter, because the point is, these are words that some person created to show us the way. And what a gift they are, poems and koans. And they don't yield to the intellect. Definitely poetry. I always had a lot of people in my classes didn't like poetry. By the end, by the eighth class, they would go, "Can you recommend some poetry books?" You know, it's kind of the way it is. So, so again, no right and wrong here. No fixing, but just meeting the frustration. I want to know more about the middle. I want to know this koan better so I can feel the right. Yes, 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 and. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you both.
Deb.
Thank you so much. There's so many things that I related to, but just want to say to begin with that I don't know if anybody's seen, we happened to see like 5 minutes of the Olympic ping pong. It's just unbelievable. They're out here, the table's here. It's just the Chinese. Like, that's beside the
Chinese
point.
Whispers.
Yeah. But so I get up at 4:30 to do work, you know, and get ready for the day. And so the period after the samu ends is like, oh, I'd like to have a little space. Well, today we were, the assistant tens and I were working right up to the han. And so, you know, feeling a little like, oh, I get my rest time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then the door was open to outside, and it looked so beautiful. I'm just going to go stand on the porch there. And you know that circle out there? A robin came and landed on it, and it was just hanging there.
Mm.
And then flew away, and it just touched me that,
yeah,
you know, that, and it kind of revived me, you know, like it was just this moment of wonder.
Yeah. Well, and there certainly are those moments. All of us can go to the door and hope the robin comes back. But probably better to be open to the moments as they come to you. You know, as we say, it's here. But we're usually too busy, too caught up. And so how lovely you and the universe had a little moment this morning.
You know, what I especially love about your story, Deb, is that you were disappointed, you were frustrated, you were, you know, the time ran away and it wasn't what you wanted, and you got up at 4:30, gosh darn it, and you know, and I'm working, and there's the han, and then the stopping, and the turning. Not that you turned away from that was with you. Right? You didn't say, let me go look for robins. You just said, okay, that's how it is right now, but I can do this little thing. And then the gift of the universe comes forward. So this is why we value everything, including our frustration and our disappointment. And, you know, in many forms of spiritual practice, you cut things in half and you throw the negative stuff in the garbage. But we don't do that. We think everything, we believe actually everything is the Buddha Dharma. So, thank you.
And I just want to add that it's not that special things happen at Sashimi. It's that this practice, this intensive practice, it opens us up to seeing the special and the ordinary that's happening all the time. I mean, it was a robin.
What are the goal for
this? Yeah, give us a break. Yeah.
How many times? Ego.
Yeah.
And, well, yeah, you saw it. And here's a little advertisement for Sashin. Keep doing this, and it starts to happen more and more outside of Sashin. And this is part of the benefit, the value to us of these retreats. It's why some of us do them again and again and again. So thank you. Thanks. What a lovely story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe one more. We'll do it.
I was just going to see if we should close the windows because I don't want the robin to go.
It can bear it.
Yeah. Maybe one Bix here.
I just want to talk a little bit about frustration and this form and everything. And like, I really don't like that I'm saying this, but like, I really need it. I really need the frustration of disappointment. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I would be where I am if it wasn't for it.
Hmm. Well, you know, David Roshi said something like that in his talk. If we had it all together and we were happy all the time, and I don't think anybody would come to Sashin or practice Zen. I think the reason we're here is that there's something. He was talking about it in terms of aloneness, feeling alone, separate. But all of us struggle, and it's the people who struggle and hear the words of the Dharma, which is still a rare thing in spite of the internet and all the teachers and everything. It's here. It's unusual to hear authentic Dharma and then have it, you know, it's like an arrow going right into our heart, and we go, I don't get it, but I want more. I want to learn. I want to understand. And so this is how wonderful, right, that you're in touch with. It's interesting that you started by saying, I don't really want to say this, isn't that what you said, something like that?
Yeah, because I wish it didn't have to be
that way. I know, and it doesn't. It doesn't have to be that way. I think there are people sometimes who are just like robins, and they're copacetic, and everything's fine. In my experience, they don't tend to last. Zen is hard. They go to other spiritual traditions that are a bit, softer and easier. I don't even want to use those words, just different. But when I'm thinking something that's important to me, I wonder if I can get the words out. It's related to what Alan was just saying, you know, that the Sashin is actually hard, and it's busy, and there's all this stuff going on, chanting and doksan and, you know, sitting and walking and eating. And that's what my daily life is like. Right, it's one thing after the other, and so one of the things about going to a lot of Sashin for me is that it trains me to stop making the division between Sashin life, the special retreat thing, and I have to go back and pay bills and, you know, do emails and pay bills. Wow, the ink. Answer an email. These pixels have just brought me a message from a friend I haven't heard from in 30 years. There's a way of integrating. Everything in Zen, I think, is about integrating. Integrating what we think is not valuable with what we think is valuable, and finding, just as Alan said, that everything is it. The ordinary life is the life we've been looking for. That's enough.
And if our frustration and our irritation and our confusion is a resource, then we are all very rich indeed. Thank you. Please restore the Zendo.